Janeway, Spock, Spear, Locke's acting very weird, Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife, Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hard, Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher, bad left, Edward is an idiot, Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red, Data's cat, Kempak sat, Q has had enough of that, beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go!
We talk about the series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series,
well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Thursday, November 10th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That means we're live. That means you can call 646-668-2433 and join in the festivities. And we've got lots of festivities for you guys tonight. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Prodigy, Let Sleeping Borg Lie. Geez, I wonder what that, you think the Borg might be in that one? I wonder. We're going to talk about it, so stick around and find out. But wait, there's more. We have convention calendar as well. Maybe there's a convention coming up in your area you didn't know about. You can go hang out there, have some fun, meet some fans. So you can find out on convention calendar. We also have Star Trek birthdays too. If your birthday is this week, who do you share a birthday with? Dun, dun, dun. You're going to find out. And we also have Star Trek news as usual. Lots of great stuff to talk about. In particular, Star Trek Prodigy got nominated for an award. I wonder what that might be. And of course, Pluto TV is adding another Star Trek channel. And just all kinds of fun. We're going to also have our band shout-outs as well. So give us a call at 646-668-2433 and join in the fun. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. And before we get too far, let me introduce to you my awesome Trekspurts. And we'll start off with Charles, who's in Las Vegas. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. Ready to talk some Trek and snuggle my legs under the blanket. It's a little chilly out there. It's probably warmer in Vermont right now. Jim probably had 60s and 70s today, unlike those of us who barely got out of the 50s.
It was beautiful. And we have with us back together again the Three Musketeers. The Portland Trifecta is with us. We'll start off with David, the donut guy. How you doing, David?
Pretty good. The Three Musketeers candy bar sounds really good about right now.
Or how about a Baby Ruth? Baby Ruths are pretty good, okay, too. I like those.
Snickers.
Also from Portland, we have Paul, the wine/toy guy. How you doing tonight, Paul?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. I've been working like a crazy person today, but it's good. You know, it's good when you put in the work and you actually get good results and stuff's going all right. So a good day. It's a lot chillier here, getting down into the freezing zone at night now in the good old PNW at night, which I love because I love winter. And it's good. And there's just been all kinds of magical appearances by all things toy-related this week, which has been extremely fun for me. So it's been a really pretty good week.
Wow. Rutland's the warm spot. That's odd. And also wrapping up the Portland trifecta, we have our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
Oh, man, I am doing pretty well. And, you know, if we're going to be the Three Musketeers now, I call Porthos. You guys can't have him. He's mine.
Can I be Cardinal Richelieu?
You can have Aramis. He'd be all right. He's not a bad choice.
Aramis sounds too much like male cologne. I can't do it.
You can't have Porthos because Porthos belongs to Captain Archer. You'll have to be Spock.
You know, I owned a beagle growing up, and lovely dogs, awesome hunting dogs, very cute. Those dogs love to bark and howl. Bark and howl.
Oh,
they
sure do.
Howl,
oh, my
bark
God.
And howl, man. That's what they do.
That's super true.
Well, all dogs love to bark. My dog, bark, 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 bark. She just loves to bark. So, Eric, if our fans of this podcast wanted to find out what's going on in the world of Star Trek, or maybe they wanted to listen to last week's Comic Corner, where would they go? Where's the easiest place to find all that information at your fingertips?
Oh, well, Jim, logic dictates that the name of the podcast is Trek Talking. Therefore, I would go to trektalking.com on the interwebs.
That's right. That's right. Paul, where would you go for all your Star Trek information?
Oh, dude, I'd go to some underground speakeasy that you needed to be able to convey a salacious password through a small slot in the door in order to get that information, right? So I'd lean right into that little tiny hinged opening, and I would whisper, TrekTalking.com. And I know that door would open for me, and I would be allowed
in. It would.
They would pop right open. That's right, guys. Go to TrekTalking.com, and you'll find everything there. You have bios. You can find pictures of us wonderful co-hosts there as well. You might see a chocolate donut with rainbow sprinkles on it, maybe. It could be there. But it's an ever-growing site. I add stuff to it every day. I'm always working on it. I think I like it. TrekTalking.com. Check it out. You won't be disappointed. So if you go to TrekTalking.com, by the way, bottom right-hand corner, you'll see a link to our Facebook page. You click on that link, and boom, it'll take you right to Facebook. Our Facebook page, though, is not TrekTalking.com. I tried to get Trek Talking, could not get it. So our Facebook page is Trek Talking and Beyond. But if you just go to TrekTalking.com, you can click on the link and go there. And when you get there, you will see at the top of the page a giant live long and prosper. And all you do is click on there and say, hey, Uncle Jim, my name is Jose, and I'm listening in Mexico, for instance. And every week, yours truly, Uncle Jim, will pick 20 lucky fans. It's better than winning the lottery. What would you do with $1.5 billion? You'd rather have your name mentioned on Trek Talking, right? I know I would. So anyways, just leave your name there. If you see a heart next to your name from yours truly, then you are going to be featured on a fan shout out. So Eric, do you want to get us started with our fan shout outs this week?
Oh, I absolutely do, Jim. Our very first fan shout-out goes out to a good friend up north, not too far away. John M. Manzo is listening to us all the way from Nunavut in Canada. John, thank you so much for supporting us north of the border. I love so many parts of your country. I have been around your way. It is beautiful. So thank you so much, and kapla to you, sir. Now we're going to shift over to the next continent to the right. Linda Powell is saying hello to us from De Demsvaart in the Netherlands. That's right, the country that somehow manages to be 50% below sea level and produce like amazing culture, amazing food, amazing architecture, amazing – what isn't amazing about the Netherlands? Linda, I love your country. I hope to go there someday, and thank you so much for listening to Trek Talking. Oscar Navarro is saying hello to us from Guadalajara, Mexico. And Oscar, we say live long and prosper to you, sir. We really appreciate your country as well. Such a good partner in so many ways. And I know so many great people from your exact area of the country. Love them. Good people. So Oscar, thank you for listening to us. My final fan shout out goes out to, that's right, an Oregon friend. Michael Monroe is listening to us all the way from Klamath Falls, driven through your area many times, my friend. Michael, thank you so much for listening to us from my home state. Charles, who would you like to say hello to?
Well, let's start off with going the same direction Eric did, with Marquis Hall from Mount Forest, Ontario, Canada. And let's head a little west to Misty Oakley in Anchorage, Alaska. Then, well, I guess we'll head south and east for James Solis in Southern California. Just spent some time in Southern California over the Halloween weekend off in Anaheim. And finally to Michael Morrison Kerr from Orchard, Washington. Back up north again, above Eric. David, who do you have on your list?
Yeah, so I got a top fan from James Peacock from Australia. Thank you for listening. I also have Paul Jarrett from Menifee, California. Next on the list is Jeff Gladstone from Michigan, U.S. Last on my list is Wendy Lancaster from Australia. Paul, who's on your list?
I got all kinds of – I got nothing but winners here today on mine. I feel very fortunate indeed. First of all, I got to yell loud to get all the way across the Atlantic, but to our good friend and listener, Graham Pepper Evans, who resides in the phenomenal kingdom of Bwlcaegwyn in Wales, up in the north part of Wales. I can tell you that Bwlcaegwyn is actually known for being, like, I believe, the record holder of being the highest point in all of Wales on there. I believe it is the altitude record for
That's
being
cool.
the highest place there. So you can see every single Doctor Who location that was ever shot in
yes.
Wales. And there's a lot of them there, I'll tell you. Wales gets used as locations for Doctor Who more than I can even begin to count. All right, but really amazing. Yeah, it is the highest village in all of Wales, and it's an amazing country with a great history and truly marvelous, sometimes impenetrable to outsiders' language, but absolutely a splendid place on the world to live. So I am just delighted that Graham reached out and said hello and that you're a fan of the show and a fan of Star Trek. So thank you, Graham. It is wonderful to hear from you. Got to spin the old globe here, go all the way down to the other side of the hemisphere to Darwin in Australia's Northern Territory, a.k.a. the Outback, baby, to our good friend Matt Van Helsing. I'm Matt,
nice.
You may not be missing right now because you may be out slaying vampires, right? With
That's
that
right.
kind of a you know moniker to live up to. You're probably
right.
out there whittling sharp wooden stakes tonight, Matt. But we hear you. We speak your name. And we are thrilled that you are part of our Star Trek family. Thanks, Matt. I don't know where, but somewhere in that teeming metropolis that is London, back in Europe, Kerry Hills. Kerry Hills is also a Star Trek and Trek Talking fan. Hi, Kerry. How you doing? I love London. I need to get back there really, really soon. I need to ride on the I. I need to go to museums. I feel it's super overdue. And to reconnect with the Star Trek community in England. And finally for me, in one of those magnificent places on the planet, the Netherlands, in the region of Quadendam, it is Tim Tross who is saying hello. Tim Tross in the Netherlands. Thank you so much for expressing your enthusiasm for both Trek Talking and all things Star Trek. It's a global community. We feel privileged to be part of it and delighted that you all are too. How about you, Jim?
Well, I just want to say that all of our top fans can go to trektalking.com to find out all the information they need to know so that they never miss a podcast or their name on a future fan shout out. TrekTalking.com, the one, the only. So I want to say a couple to top fan Matt Amos, who's listening in Copenhagen, New York. Never been there. Not sure exactly where that might be. But at any rate, thank you to listening to Matt, who's in Copenhagen, New York. We also want to say kapla to Melanie Jean Mayfield, who says, originally from Eureka, California, Humboldt County, Redwood's tallest trees on the earth, now residing in Modesto, California, a future home of Bradward Schler. Huh.
It's true, man. And if you have not been to the Redwoods of Northern California, you have not lived a full life's experience. To me, it's like one of those spiritual places. You go there, you cannot possibly understand the scale of these trees until you get there, and then you're like, oh, now I get it. Yeah, now I get how the whole earth
completely,
is
completely, dude.
Yeah.
Humboldt County is mythic. I mean, it is mythic. It is famous for a lot of things, but it's mostly famous for its trees.
Yeah.
Things grow really well there. It's also an epicenter for Sasquatch sightings.
We'll
let you draw your own conclusions, but Humboldt County is a pretty amazing place. Amazing human beings live there.
Planet of the Apes is there as well.
Oh, is it really? Okay. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because, where are you going to shoot the best trees? Right there.
In the new Planet of the Apes movies, that was the epicenter of the ape culture. I don't know what to call it, but that's where the apes hung out. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. So that's neat. We also want to say kapla to Ernest Henderson, who's listening to us in Northern Ireland, where my grandfather is from. And last but definitely not least, we want to say hello and thank you to top fan Jeffrey Gonzagas Reyes, who's listening to us in the Philippines. Like I said, guys, if you'd like to hear your name mentioned on a future fan shout-out, just head on over to trektalking.com, click on the little Facebook logo in the corner, you'll go right to our Facebook page and drop us a line and let us know where you're listening from. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. Just let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking and we'll get you on the air immediately. And speaking of which, we have a caller on the line right now. So let me see if I can get my little old Kindle here to do its magic. Come on, you can do it. Sometimes it's a little, hello, thank you for calling Trek Talking. What's your name and where you're calling us from tonight?
Kapla, from Brother Ray.
Hey, what's up,
what's
Ray?
And no. Matter of fact, I moved up. Now I became Governor Ray.
Governor Ray.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, seriously.
I became Governor Ray, my brothers. I became Governor Ray. The election, I became the governor of the Bronx.
Well, congratulations, Governor.
Your Eminence.
Yes, absolutely. So, Ray, what do you think, Ray? Ray, do you think that the Mets are going to get Aaron Judge and the Yankees are going to pick up DeGrom? What do you think?
Be honest with you, he go. I don't know. Is he going to do this? Let him do it. Is he gonna do it? So right now, let him do what he want to do. The season's over now. Now we're doing football. But honestly, guys, yes, baseball is done. Now I got like two choices. Now I got like football, basketball, and basketball it ain't the same. So what I'm gonna do is, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to wing it to see what is what.
Yeah, I hear you, Ray. I hear you.
You know what I'm saying? Let's wing it as it is. You know what I'm saying? So whatever happens is going to happen. Like I said, 2023, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to be 50, God willing, soon. And my brother, let's just see what happens. But you know what I'm saying. But let's see what happens. Anyway,
yep.
what's going on with us tonight?
Well, we're going to be talking about the Borg, Ray.
Oh no!
Oh yeah, the Borg. Yep.
Uh-oh.
Y'all went to my favorite subject.
Uh-oh.
Hard
uh-oh.
To believe, isn't it?
Oh, yes. You're going to my favorite.
We are the Borg. Lower your shield and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to serve us. Resistance is futile.
I mean, it's a solid philosophy.
You will be a philosophy with a being. It's trying to assimilate in a cyborg land like this. You know what I'm saying? To assimilate and then do what? What are their objectives?
Well, they are clear about their objective. Their objective is to attain perfection, and they believe that if they attain all of the knowledge in the universe, that they will become perfect. That's why they idolize things like the Omicron particle, and that's why they try and take in as many cultures as they can. But I think it's very interesting that on tonight's Prodigy that we're going to be discussing later in the show, we see something that we have never seen before, which is assimilation of a non-corporeal species. And I think that's very interesting because I think we associate the Borg with cybernetic implants and lots of wetware and that kind of stuff. And here we got no wetware, and yet we got Borg stuff. So, yeah. Anyway, it's going to be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, true. For sure.
Okay. That's true. Okay. Now, I know the Borg history. It's like, from my opinion, the book, but if they got that much knowledge for every species, I'm talking about the Rama, the Klingons, the human being, Terrans, everything else, right? So what are they going to do with all the knowledge? To conquer the universe, then from that point, what they gonna do from there? It's nothing left. It's almost like I go to my castles, right? I order a case of 30 burgers. Okay, 30 burgers, right? Now I already finished 25. I got 5 left in one night. So after the next 5, the next 4 days, then what? The do again?
I think that's a very astute observation, Ray, actually, because I think that you could apply that to almost anything where somebody has something in such an excess that they couldn't possibly want any more, and yet they crave more. So I think the Borg, you know, if they were to – we're going to talk about this later, but I'm just going to, like, respond to your thing that you said right now, which was that I think if the Borg were to assimilate every single thing in the entire universe, then they would have attained whatever their thing of perfection was. And then what do you got? Well, the only thing that's left after that is the emotion, the humanity, the other side of the equation, right? It's not all just like ones and zeros and information and all that kind of stuff. They have a little bit of a hard time, except for the Queen, understanding what it means to have a connection to another entity. And I think that that's one of the things that makes all of us special, right? Because we live our lives not just through information and stuff. We live them adjacent to other people. And other people are really important, which is why it's so cool that you call in every week, man. It's good to hear from you.
That's true. I'm going to call back later on about that, but I'm going to leave just this one little note before I go. I'll call back a little while, I guess. Okay, now, what's next? Now, if you remember from Star Trek, the motion picture, right? What next? Other mentions like this? Now, if the Borg could do all this from the present position, let's just say they master up to the highest level. So, I got $250,000 in my pocket right now. Now, I got $250,000. I'm talking about $1 billion, okay? I got $1 billion in my pocket right now. Now, if I want more money, what I got to do next? To go to another dimension or what? That's the only thing, that's the only thing that might be next. If they smart enough to go for that route.
That's true.
Well, I mean, taking the easy way out is one way to go, right? Like, always going for profit. That's living your life like a Ferengi, man. Borg or not Ferengi.
Yeah.
Nope. No, you know what I'm saying? He do his thing. He get his profit. But you know what? He want more. More. I understand that.
Well, there's always the alternate universe they could go into.
Yes. I just said that, yes. Or the universe, or go back in time, whatever. If they want to possess more to top of this, the stockpile, trust me, or the universe, go back in time, or whatever. Believe me, the Borg to me, in the social universe is the most highest adversary they went through. But the only issue is, it's getting computerized. So, you know what I'm saying? So for my opinion on this one, it's like, you know what? If they want to achieve more of their thinking of, like, you know, Kong universe, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, they go higher. But aren't you, it's like, I don't know if they know that part. Right now, it's like teaching a small child how to walk. And also go, before you walk, you always crawl before you walk.
Absolutely. Very true. Very true. Couldn't agree more.
That's true.
Yep.
All right,
that's
true. I got one more document. I'm gonna continue on and listen to the board thing a little while, and I'm gonna jump in that one.
All right. Sounds good, buddy. Have you seen last week's Prodigy? That's what we're gonna be discussing.
Yes, I've seen it.
Awesome. Excellent. All right, call back, brother. Talk to you soon.
I've seen it.
Go have some, and then get right back to us.
No problem. I got you guys back.
All right.
You take care. All right,
guys. Bye. That's Ray from the Bronx that's with us. And you know what time it is now? It's time for...
That was not a Klingon song.
All right, guys, it's time for Star Trek birthdays. And this is the part of the show where we get to go back and remember some of our favorite characters, some of our favorite episodes across the decades of Star Trek, which is a lot of fun for us. And we always start off by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we have 7 birthdays that would have been celebrated that we are honoring during this segment of our podcast. The first goes out to, I'll just say it, the man, the myth, the legend, Ian Wolfe would have had a birthday this week. That's right, the actor Ian Wolfe, born November 4th, 1896, one of only 14 people in Star Trek to have been born in the 19th century, and actually died at the ripe old age of 95 years old in 1992 then, long time ago. So we've been without Ian for a long time, but Ian was, of course, known in Star Trek circles as Septimus on TOS's Bread and Circuses, and also Mr. Ataz in All Our Yesterdays. Ian was a Illinois native, much like myself, and like I said, born in the 19th century, at age 22, joined up with the Army, man, and he's one of only 2 people connected to Star Trek who served in World War I. That's right, him and Paul Fix. And if you if you have already forgotten who Paul Fix is, that's okay. He's only in one episode, so you don't have to worry about that. He is Dr. Mark Piper from Where No Man Has Gone Before, so he's pre-McCoy doctor. So him and Ian Wolf are the only two guys in Star Trek to have served in World War I, which I just think is amazing. Ian has over 200 film and television credits to his name, a career spanning 56 years. You want to get into some Lucas? I mean, he did some stuff for THX-1138. So many things, I can't even start to talk about it. And like I said, died at the ripe old age of 95 years old in 1992. Would anybody else like to say anything about Ian Wolf? I mean, this amazing actor was around for
a while. It's unbelievable. I mean, he's just one of those faces that's just like, you know, defines what a character actor is, man. I mean, defines it. He's been in – this is a guy
who never
took a day off.
Yeah. It's so true.
Never took
years,
a day off, apparently.
Man. Yeah.
Right? He was in, I mean, pretty much any TV show, like a 40-year span of time he was on at some point, right? And he was in Saboteur with Hitchcock. I mean, come on. I mean, there's
a few things with
a legacy right there, man.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, he was from WIKRP to The Fall Guy to Remington Steele to Barney Miller. I mean, it's just ridiculous. This guy was just in everything. And if you haven't watched All Our Yesterdays in a while, I mean, it's a pretty great episode, man. Mm-hmm. You're a very agile man, Mr. H. Oz. I mean, great stuff. So a classic actor, a classic. So, yeah, 19th century. How incredible
Absolutely.
Is that, dude?
Yeah, so incredible. Cool. So cool, born in 1896. So happy birthday to Ian Wolf, a legend, like I said. And, man, I would have liked to have met him, but he's been gone for quite a while. So happy birthday, Ian Wolf. Happy birthday as well to Robert Fortier, who played Tomar in the TOS episode By Any Other Name. If you do not remember who that character is, that's okay. He's the guy that Scotty gets drunk and basically takes him out of the game. what I didn't know before was that his name was a pun. Tomar actually means to drink in Spanish. So there you go. He co-starred previously with William Shatner himself in the 1965 horror movie Incubus, and frequently worked himself as an actor with director Robert Altman, who has a few credits under his belt, including McCabe and Mrs. Miller with René Auberjonois, who we all knew who that is. He also was in a couple of other films featuring Ray Walston, who just had a birthday, I believe it was last week or 2 weeks ago. If you don't remember or didn't hear that show, that's Boothby from Star Trek. So we've got some connections here. And unfortunately, Fortier died of a heart attack back in 2005 at the ripe old age of 78. So happy birthday, Robert. We're also saying happy birthday this week to actress Jan Shutan. Jan was, of course, best known in Star Trek circles as Lieutenant Mira Romaine in the TOS episode The Lights of Zatar. Very beautiful actress, of course. In that episode, she becomes romantically involved with Scotty, you might remember. The Zatarans were in there. Jan didn't have a whole ton of acting credits under her belt. She was a winner of the TV program Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts when she was a child, which I thought was kind of interesting. So she was a child kind of actress, talent scout winner, and was in a couple of motion pictures here and there. Appeared in that campy 1978 horror film Dracula's Dog. If you haven't seen that, definitely would check that out. Unfortunately, we just lost her last year, October 7th, 2021, at the ripe old age of 88. So happy birthday, Jan Shutan. We're also saying happy birthday this week to actor Carl Steven, who played the 9-year-old version of Spock, one of 11 actors who have portrayed Spock in Star Trek, not in Star Trek 3, but overall 11 actors have portrayed. Carl was in Star Trek 3, 9-year-old Spock, in the search for Spock during that rapid aging scene where we see many, many versions of Spock, one after the other. this was his very first feature film appearance, and he actually, interesting, played a younger version of Leonard Nimoy in the 1991 made-for-television movie Never Forget, directed by Joseph Sargent. So twice he played something related to Leonard Nimoy, which I just think is freaking fascinating that they did that. They must have thought that he looked like him as a kid or something. If Carl Steven looks familiar, he appeared on Webster quite a bit back in the 86, 80, 87 back days, if you watch that show. Was on Little House on the Prairie even earlier from that. Unfortunately, we lost him way too early, July 2011, at the age of 36. He had had some legal troubles, was in prison, died of a heroin overdose. Still, that does not overshadow his fantastic performance as a very quick 9-year-old Spock in Star Trek III. So happy birthday, Carl Steven. Happy birthday as well to Norman Lloyd, who played for Professor Galen in TNG's episode The Chase. What a blast of an episode. I love this episode so much. This is the one where Picard's old mentor comes to him with the archaeological find and tries to get him on his team to go help him out. Just a fantastic episode. Go watch it if you haven't watched it for a long time. Norman Lloyd, you are not going to believe this, guys. Guess how old Norman Lloyd was when he died? That's right. You're never going to guess. You could go to 101. You could go to 1. You could go to 102, 103, 104, 105, 106 years old. Norman Lloyd lived.
Not
to
all.
Be
seriously.
106 years old. We just lost him last year in May. He was born November 8th, 1914, and lived to be 106 years old. Absolutely the oldest aged Star Trek actor that we've ever had. And not only known in Star Trek worlds, he is absolutely best known for playing Dr. Daniel Auschlander on the drama series St. Elsewhere from 1982 through 1988. Younglings, go check out that show. It's pretty good. In many, many notable films. I can't even begin to note throughout the 40s, 50s, all the way up through the 90s. He is the oldest living known actor to have appeared in the Star Trek franchise, followed by actor Dick Cherney, who is only 2 days younger than him. So I think that's
fascinating. You know what's amazing?
Yeah, what's that?
You were just talking about Ian Wolfe a couple of minutes ago, right?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Norman Lloyd and Ian Wolfe were both in Saboteur with Alfred Hitchcock.
They were both in that picture together.
So really amazing. I mean, he did, you know, another one of these guys who just seemingly just like, if he was, you know, if he was awake, he was going to work, right? I mean,
yeah.
He's just constantly working. But how cool that if you want to check out both those Star Trek actors, there's one classic Hitchcock film where they were both in it. It just blew my mind.
And Norman Lloyd actually had, like, multiple Hitchcock connections. I don't know if you know about that, but he, like, actually became a producer for Hitchcock. Yeah, he was in
like Alfred Hitchcock Presents, right? Wasn't he on that?
Yes.
Didn't he have somebody with that show?
Yeah, he was a producer for Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Yep, absolutely. So,
yeah, he was
cool.
In Dead Poets Society, you know, the Robin Williams film.
Oh,
he
was, such was one a good of his, movie. Oh, my God.
One of his last roles, I think, at least his last, you know, theatrical roles. But mm-hmm. what a guy. I mean, incredible. Just, you know, always played a character who looks seemingly very, you know, exemplified, like, ethics and character, right? One of those, like, the trustworthy mentor type of character. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He's just got that face, that face that you trust. Yeah, for sure. Well, happy birthday, Norman Lloyd. I've sure have had a good time talking about you, and what a great role for you to be the mentor for Jean-Luc Picard, who so many people consider a mentor. I just think that's a really special role. So happy birthday. Moving on, we are also saying happy birthday this week to actress Irene Sale, who played Louise in the TOS episode Miri. You may remember that episode. What you might not know is that Irene, born on November 8th, actually started her career as a comedian on the comedy series Toast of the Town in the early 1960s. She, of course, is related to actress and producer Madeline Lee Gifford, and was in the science fiction film Future Shock If you haven't seen Future Shock, that's another one I would recommend. It's kind of one of those like B movies that you just need to see in your lifetime, in my opinion. Lots and lots of comedy appearances for her. And she also lived to be 95 years old, which I think, she only lived to be 69. I apologize. Which I think is, pretty cool. She lived to be a good age, and she had a lot of different little silent bits throughout her life in many, many things throughout television. So happy birthday to Irene Sale, who did a great job in that episode as Mary, and then continued that career on. Finally, our last remembrance this week goes out to actress Thelma Lee, who did live to be 95 years old. We lost her, unfortunately, back in 2012. She had lots and lots of credits to her name. she was also known for being a stunt woman. So Thelma Lee, thank you so much for your Star Trek contributions. Happy birthday to you. And that, guys, does it for our remembrances. So, let's carry on to those who are still with us. Charles, who would you like to say hello and happy birthday to?
All right. Well, let's start off with Irene Sue, who played Kim Mary in Voice episode Favorite Son, an author. Well, interesting little trivia on here. Irene is fluent in three different dialects of Chinese. Also in Japan, knows some Japanese and French. So, a American who did a lot of acting in her roles. Sarah Booth, who played Ludia in Discovery's episode The Examples. Vidal Pearson played Romulan Tatan in TNG's Unification, and also played Rugal in DS9's Cardassian. Zoe McLean played crewman Tal Sierras in Voy's episode Good Shepherd and The Haunting of Deck 12. Interesting looking at hers. One of her things was she was a regular in the later seasons of JAG. Nicholas Kipros played Romulan Movar in TNG's episode Redemption and Redemption 2. Interesting. Worked as Captain Nita in Star Wars, the Enterprise Strikes Back radio drama. That was an interesting tie-in for Star Trek and Star Wars. Lisa Berry played Kanka in Discovery's episode There Is a Tide. And then my last one, I'm going to tie in with Eric. Alfred Woodard played Lily Stone in Star Trek First Contact. Also appeared in St. Elsewhere, same TV show Eric talked about. But there's another tie-in for Paul. Paul might have her on her shelf, on his shelf. She has a Playmate figure from First Contact. But that's cool. Part of her trivia. That's part of her trivia, the fact that she actually has her own action figure. Part of the First Contact series.
Alfred Woodard is stunning. She is stunning. She is like the full package of talent. I mean, she is just like anything she's in, she just shows up ready to kick everyone's ass. She's a phenomenal, phenomenal actor.
Well, of course, that's why they put her in First Contact. So, Paul, who's on your list?
All right, man. I once again seem to have drawn all aces on here, a lot of amazing folks on here. I'm super excited about this first one, actress Ursuline Bryant. Okay. I don't know if everyone else does this, but I have like my little list of characters I wish we saw more of in the Star Trek world, right? And I love the first season episode, Conspiracy. That's the one where you find out that there's all these crazy aliens that are, you know, embedded into, you know, Star Trek Admiralty and taking over trying to take over the Federation, take over Starfleet. Well, Ursuline Bryant played Captain Tryla Scott in that episode, right? You see her at the beginning when they're meeting on that planet to kind of divulge stuff. And she's just super cool. She's like very badass. And she is famous for having commanded the USS Renegade. And she is supposedly the person who attained the rank of captain faster than any other person in Starfleet history.
Wow.
So she's like a legend, right? A legend, right? And how cool is this when an actor is willing to do this kind of thing? Because most actors are not. Years later, in 2013, she said, okay, yeah, there was a podcast series called Starship Excelsior. Right. And she showed up on Starship Excelsior and played Tryla Scott again.
Cool.
Later in life. Right. Just because I think there were folks who recognized that this is a great character and there's a lot of fans who would love to hear more of your story. How did your arc go? It was very cool that she was willing to do that. So massive felicitations, Ursuline Bryant. I wish there were, if I ever got to bend the ear of somebody at IDW and say, hey, you know, we're looking for new comic books to write, right? Ursuline Bryant, that's a cool character, man, and she's a powerful woman. Yeah, she would be phenomenal to see what's the stories behind her, what drove her to attain the rank of captain so fast, and what kind of other adventures did she have? I'm fascinated by that character. All because of you, Ursuline, and the work you did. So happy birthday, my friend. Happy birthday also to Samantha A. Smith, who is a recent addition to the Star Trek family, who played the Eldrith leader in the Strange New Worlds episode, Strange New Worlds, the pilot. She was basically one of the first aliens we ever saw on Strange New Worlds. Really, really cool. So phenomenal, you know, it's, again, one of these actors who I'm always impressed with, right? You're covered under all this makeup, right? And you're still, it's like the makeup doesn't even exist. You're still able to really convey a strong sense of character, and it's just remarkable. So really, really cool. Happy birthday to you. Next up, another one of those legendary character actors. Sir, I salute you. Actor Harris Yulin, who played Amin Maritza in Deep Space Nine's episode Duet. I just watched that episode last week, okay, because I've been kind of going back to the very beginning of the sock drawer for Deep Space Nine and watching all these episodes again, right? And wow, I mean, we're talking like, you know, there's so many really interesting Cardassians that don't get her, you know, that don't get the type of discussion or time that they deserve. And wow, is that of an infamous Cardassian. Wow, that is one right there. It's an incredible performance and really wild. But this cat, Harris Yulin's been in literally everything, okay? He was in Scarface. He was in Training Day. It's just ridiculous. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Law and Order, 24. He had a good arc on 24, as I remember. He was on The X-Files. Right, a classic television series, La Femme Nikita, again, you know, Deep Space Nine is what we're talking about him here for. But this is a guy who worked like a ton, really, really tremendous actor. And it's just, if you have not watched that episode, go check it out. Go check out Duet. I want to say season two. I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure it's season two. But it's really interesting when you sort of see a reversal of the chain of command dynamic where a Cardassian sort of captive and talking for his life and trying to set the record straight. It's a fascinating performance, and you really see the theatrical stage training that Harris Yulin brings to the performance. So tremendous. Shipping over to a little bit different type of performer here, the just ridiculously staggeringly unforgettable Famke Janssen. Okay, Famke Janssen, who played that wonderful character of Kamala in the Next Gen fifth season episode of Perfect Mate. Right, it's like her whole purpose in life is to be this perfect mate to create a wonderful diplomatic marriage. Right, but of course, she made a splash not too far removed from that debut in the Bond movie GoldenEye. I'm sure a lot of folks remember that from the Pierce Brosnan era of James Bond, but absolutely amazing actress. She's been in the X-Men movies, House on Haunted Hill. You know, in the X-Men movie, she plays Jean Grey, a.k.a. Phoenix, right? She's How to Get Away with Murder. She's just remarkable, really tremendous, pretty dang cool. So, Famke Janssen, wherever you are, I know there's a big, you know, line of people to wish you a happy birthday, I'm sure, wherever you might be, and I'm one of them. So it's great that you were part of the Star Trek universe here. Again, going back to Strange New Worlds, folks who are really making a huge splash in bringing Star Trek back to prominence, let me wish a tremendous happy birthday to Rebecca Romijn. Rebecca Romijn, okay, who played Una Chin Reilly, currently plays, what am I saying? Who plays Una Chin Reilly in the episodes An Obol for Sharon, Such Sweet Sorrow, and Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2, where we first saw the character on Discovery. And then she continued on, and we saw her continue on to develop that character in Short Trek's episodes, like Ask Not and Q&A. And now she is a full-on series regular, and boy, did we really end that season one with a bit of a cliffhanger in terms of her fate, because she's been accused of a crime. And comics are starting to explore what's going on with Una Chin Reilly during this period of incarceration. Are we going to find out what happens to her? I know we are, and you got to just believe that when whenever that magic day is, Strange New Worlds debuts its second season premiere, I'm guessing that we're going to be seeing a lot of Rebecca Romijn as Una Chin Reilly in that episode. So really, really cool. Welcome to Star Trek, Rebecca. It's great to have you here, and happy birthday, friend. Happy birthday also to actor Dakin Matthews, who played Admiral Patterson in the Voyager episode Relativity, a favorite of many. And then, of course, we cannot forget this individual, because this guy has got it going on. This is a person who's been in more stuff than I can possibly shake a stick at. The great, the indelible. You look at him, and there's just no one like him. Vincent Schiavelli, okay? This actor has done so many different things. You just, no one else looks like this. Well, we know you're born in Brooklyn. What do you want? You know, everyone from Brooklyn has a certain look, right? I mean, it's amazing. But he's done so many things. He's been in, it's ridiculous. We mention him here because of his Star Trek appearance as the holographic Minosian peddler in the Arsenal of Freedom on Star Trek The Next Generation. But Vincent Schiavelli, Vincente, has been in just like everything. You name it. Fast Times at Ridgemont High, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, Ghost, Tomorrow Never Dies, the James Bond franchise. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous. He is one of those faces who just kills, and he's been in just about everything. He was in the Blade Runner video game. He's just somebody who works a ton. I know he's been at least one X-Files episode that I remember. Still working, still doing all kinds of good stuff. Always a treat to see him. Vincente Schiavelli, absolutely delighted to be able to spend a couple minutes wishing you a happy birthday. And that's it for me, Yangs and Combs. I'm going to pass the baton over to our friend Jim. Jim, who are you going to be saying greetings to today?
Well, I've got a few birthdays on my list, not a whole bunch, but I've got some really good ones. First of all, we want to say happy birthday to Keith Sutherland, the actor who lent his voice to Sepik in the TAS episode Yesteryear. Guys, if you're only going to watch one episode of Star Trek, the animated series, please watch Yesteryear. He's one of the bullies that bullies young Spock. And actually, J.J. Abrams recreated that role in Star Trek 2009. He had the bully bullying Spock. So
Star Trek,
the animated series.
Yeah, when you watched Star Trek 2009, it felt really familiar, right? But only if you had seen Yesteryear.
Yeah, I hope DC Fontana got paid for that.
Oh, I hope she did. I hope she did.
Because if not, I'd be on the phone to the lawyer. You know what I'm saying?
Get some residual. So happy birthday.
Yeah, because she created that. And you're absolutely right, dude. Best episode ever.
It's good. It's really good. We also want to say happy birthday, speaking of Star Trek 2009, to Jason Matthew Smith, who played Cupcake. Hendersaw.
Star Trek 2009.
Cupcake? The Cupcake security
guy. I don't know where Cupcake came
from. What am I hearing?
This is the guy. This guy was a red shirt. He died in every Star Trek movie, but still came back in the next one. Interesting piece of trivia. And he's the one that Captain Kirk slaps in the face and calls Cupcake in the very first movie. And they carry that through Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond. And he comes back in every movie, even though he died. He actually got killed in Star Trek Into Darkness by the Klingons. Came back again in Star Trek Beyond. So happy birthday to Jason Matthew Smith, the Cupcake. Yeah, happy birthday. This next one is a really great Romulan. We want to say happy birthday to Carolyn Seymour, who played Sub-Commander Tarsis in the TNG episode Contagion, a Romulan. But I think the Romulan that she brings the best life to is Commander Toreth in the TNG episode Face of the Enemy. This is the one where Troy wakes up as a Romulan on a bird of prey, on a Klingon warbird, I mean. Excellent episode. She also played Maritza Yale in the TNG episode First Contact, and Mrs. Templeton in the Voy episodes Cathesis and Persistence of Vision. So happy birthday to Carolyn Seymour. All right, here's a big one, guys. We want to say happy birthday to Armin Shimerman. And Armin Shimerman, of course, plays Quark on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He reprised that role on Lower Decks. And, we lost Eric on Lower Decks. But he also holds a singular distinction for being the first actor to play a Ferengi on Star Trek.
Yep.
He portrayed the Ferengi as seen in the episode Last Outpost. This is when the Ferengi were kind of, I don't know, wiggly, nervous, twitchy things, and they had these blue energy whip.
One of the early enemies of the Federation.
Yes, yes. And he would also appear as a Ferengi again in the TNG episode Peak Performance. So Armin Shimerman, happy birthday. The next guy kind of took off with Wesley Crusher. We want to say happy birthday to Eric Menyuk, who portrayed the Traveler in TNG's episodes Where No Man Has Gone Before, Remember Me, and Journey's End. He originally auditioned for the role of Data. And funny story about him, back in 1991, my wife and I were on Sea Trek, and we were hanging out down in the lounge area of the ship. And we were hanging out there with Carl Striken, who plays Mr. Holm on Star Trek, The Next Generation. And Eric came over with his wife and kids and sat down at the table with us. He must have known Carl because he didn't know who we were. At any rate, and that's because Carl Striken was at my wedding, by the way. That's a story for another time. And we just sat there and we're just talking, and Eric and his wife went over to get something and left my wife and me and Carl to watch his two kids while he ran over to do something, which was kind of odd that we were babysitting the Traveler's kids. Funny memory, but true. So happy birthday to Eric Menyuk. And we also want to say happy birthday to Robert Duncan McNeil, best known for portraying Tom Paris in every single episode of Star Trek Voyager. He also appeared on Lower Decks. But before that, he appeared as Cadet Nicholas Locarno in the TNG episode First Duty. I really wish they had kept that character on Voyager and not came up with the same background and just changed the name. I had to have something to do with copyright or I don't know. But at any rate, he played the same type of character. But for me, you know, I'm a geek of the 80s. I love the cheesy, campy 80s movies. And this guy was in one of the cheapest, campiest. It's right up there with Flash. He was in Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren, Courtney Cox, and Meg Foster. Great movie. Fantastic movie. Killer special effects. Check it out if you haven't seen it. Masters of the Universe. It came out in 1987. And that wraps up my human birthdays. Now, I always save the Klingons for last. So we want to start off by saying kapla to John Vickery, who appears in TNG's Night Terrors as Andrus Hagen, and on DS9, The Changing Face of Evil and When It Rains, and Tacking Into the Wind as Gal Rasat. But I told you he was a Klingon, and he was. He appeared in the Enterprise episode Judgment as the Klingon prosecutor Oryk. And if you guys don't remember that episode, J.G. Hertzler is in that episode as a defendant of Archer. And he refuses to give up his honor and turn on Archer. He gets sent to Ruripenthe with Archer. When the Enterprise comes to rescue Archer, they, of course, want to take him with him. But he doesn't want to go because his honor forbids it. If he leaves, his family would be dishonored, and he chooses to stay behind. Great episode. Really, really good. Check it out. It's Judgment, Star Trek Enterprise. And the last one on my list, I think, is probably one of the best chancellors. You can call her mother, by the way, Mary Chifo, who played Laurel in the first and second seasons of Star Trek Discovery. I love her character. I hope we see her on Strange New Worlds again. She has this kind of dynamic with Captain Pike that I really like. And if you haven't seen it, there is a video of her dancing with Ash Tyler, which I posted on our Facebook page. It's really funny. Go and check it out. So kapla to Mary Chifo. And that just about wraps up our birthdays, but Eric has a few corrections that he wants to make.
Well, I just wanted to make sure I got this part right. During our remembrances, I mixed up a couple of facts. So I would just like to say that Irene Sale, who played Louise in TOS's episode Miri, she is the woman who absolutely who was a stunt double and started her career as a stewardess, had a career mostly in television, and then died of a heart attack at age 69. Thelma Lee, who portrayed Kalist in Sins of the Father, was the one who started as a comedian back in the 1960s and lived to be the ripe old age of 95 in 2012. So I just mixed up the facts between those two names, got them all set now. Thanks, Jim.
Everybody's back on track again. And now it's time for convention. All right, Eric, why don't you get us started with our convention calendar this week?
Oh, man. Yes, we are going back to my old stomping grounds back in Beantown, Boscone 60. Can you believe it? 60 years, February 17th through the 19th. That's right, at the Westin Boston Seaport District in Boston, Massachusetts, the longest running science fiction and fantasy convention in New England. You should go check it out. It's amazing. Been there, done that. Yes, please do it again. Days of the Dead Las Vegas, the same weekend if you're on the other coast at the Plaza Hotel and Casino in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. I feel like I know somebody who lives there. And if you want to go to this convention, this is mostly a horror convention, but do not forget that in Hellraiser 3, we had the Trill herself, Terry Farrell, and she's going to be at this convention. So you can get your Star Trek on and get your Hellraiser on at the same convention. Woohoo! And if you wanted to instead be in the Great Northwest, Fan Expo Portland is the same weekend at the beautiful Oregon Convention Center and here in Portland, Oregon. Formerly Wizard World, just 99 days away, Fan Expo Portland is a place to celebrate all
things. I think we need
culture.
To go.
We should go. We should go. It's only 99 days away, and the tickets are not that expensive. I checked it out today. So let's go, brother.
Yeah, that's worth checking out. That'll be good. I like it.
All right. Expect a report from Fan Expo Portland a week or so after. David, which conventions are you tracking, my friend?
All right. Looks like I got the Gallifrey 1 in 2023 on February 17th through 19th. At the Los Angeles Airport Marriott, Los Angeles, California. Next is QuadCon Peoria, 2023, February 18th through the 19th, over at the Northwood Mall, Peoria, Illinois. Next is the PrezCon from February 20th to 26th. At the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel, Charlottesville, Virginia. I believe that's what it is.
Correct.
All right, Paul, what's on your list?
Oh, man, are we really talking the latter part of February already? That just blows my mind.
I know.
Well, I guess you need time to plan. You need time to plan. Well, a place that I'm sure will still be standing after the current tropical storms have fled the vicinity, Pensacola, Florida, in February 24th through 26th at the Pensacola Bay Center has the aptly named Pensacon. Get it? Pensacola, Pensacon, Pensacon.
Oh, yeah.
It just fits, right? The way that our podcast, Truck Talking, has the same name, TruckTalking.com, shameless plug. And, you know, some things are just serendipitous that way. Also, February 24th through 26th in Cary, North Carolina. Same date range, Embassy Suites by Hilton Raleigh-Durham Research Triangle. That's one of in this Raleigh-Durham's, bid to kind of sound like Silicon Valley. The Hilton Raleigh-Durham Research Triangle.
Research Triangle.
Exactly, where a lot of good research is going on. You can go to Retcon 2023, Retcon, get it? And you'll see all kinds of cool things there. This one, though, this one particularly captivates my attention and is intriguing to me. February 24th through 27th, again, we are talking 2023. Colossal Con Cruise 2023. Royal Caribbean's Independence of the Seas, departing from Cape Canaveral, Florida. We have been hearing for years about these crazy science fiction conventions that take place on cruise ships. That, to me, is a premise that is ripe for squeezing a movie out of, right? About all these crazy fans who are, like, devoted to a franchise. I can picture, like, a Galaxy Quest type of scenario happening. And if sort of something has to go wrong, right? One of the cast members is really an alien or there's a murder or something, but I just think it's just ripe for exploitation with that premise. So guys, if you're out there at Colossal Con Cruise 2023, leaving from Cape Canaveral, Florida, and you've strapped yourself onto the Independence of the Seas somehow, I'm just going to throw that out for you. That could be a great movie premise. So, you know, if you're looking for a spec script, write it up. Cause some mayhem. Do something to warrant development as a feature film if you're going to be out there independent, attending it anyway, and we'll see what happens. Charles, what do you got going on in your convention campus, buddy?
Well, okay, Paul, you can sit there and take Florida. Well, I know a few people that are going to go to L.A. instead, and they're going to the annual Star Trek The Cruise. So instead of leaving Florida this year, we'll leave in Los Angeles. February 24th to March 3rd, the Royal Caribbean Navigator of the Seas, departing from Los Angeles. I should be able to get some reports because I've heard quite a few people going this year, especially since it's on our side of the country.
And that's,
but if
yeah.
you don't...
That's
you
a 30. I'll just say that's a 3,400 person ship. So if you like cruises and you like big old ships, that's the way to do it.
Yep. And if you don't have your sea legs, you got Hero Hot Miami, February 25th, the Miami Airport Convention Center, Miami, Florida. Or the Tiaras and Hooks, February 25th at the Sanford Civic Center in Sanford, Florida. So, Jim, I bet you want to talk some news.
Absolutely.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
Okay, it's time for Star Trek news. All of the stories that we're going to talk about are just the Uncle Jim abridged versions. You can go to TrekTalkin.com and link over to our Facebook page to read the articles in their entirety. And Eric, you're going to get us started with our Star Trek news this week.
Yes, I am, sir. It is not yet a win, but it is a great nomination. Star Trek Prodigy was nominated for Best Animated Children's Series, and that's an Emmy. Emmy nomination. Good news. Star Trek Prodigy has been honored with a major nomination by the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. Prodigy has been nominated for Outstanding Animated Series for the first ever Children's and Family Emmy Awards. The Trek series aimed at younger audiences is going up against City of Ghosts, The Cuphead Show, The Proud Family Louder and Prouder, and A Tale Dark and Grim. Children's and family shows were previously included in the Daytime Emmy Awards, and so that's changing a little bit. And Prodigy creators and executive producers Dan and Kevin Hageman have 4 previous Daytime Emmy nominations, including a win for Outstanding Writing in an Animated Program for their series Troll Hunters. If you have not seen Troll Hunters, I recommend it. While Star Trek shows are regularly recognized for Emmys, there have been only a handful of outstanding series nominations. Prodigy joins Star Trek The Animated Series, which was nominated for the Daytime Emmy, for Outstanding Entertainment Children's Series in 1974 and 1975, and it actually won it in 1975, albeit there were not a lot of competitors out there. Lower Decks, Trek current animated series, was nominated for a Primetime Emmy in 2021 for Outstanding Sound Editing. The inaugural Children's and Family Emmy Awards will be presented on Saturday, December 10th and Sunday, December 11th at the Wilshire Ebel Theater in Los Angeles. Congratulations to Prodigy, a series that is doing some special things. I think we all agree. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But Paul, I would love to hear more about what you have to say on the news front.
Oh, friends, there's just always so much happening, Eric, isn't there, in terms of news? All kinds of crazy things, right? And we have found out recently, thanks to the power of ridiculously, excessively well-funded billionaires and all of their resources, that, you know, space is now accessible to everyone, right? I mean, anyone can get up there if you have enough, like,
so
scratch in your pocket, right? It's true. Shatner's proved that to us recently more, you know, indelibly than anyone. But you know what? Here's the thing. Don't necessarily put a timestamp on your, you know, voyage to space, because you can get into space even after you're dead. That's what we're going to talk about next, right? Because Star Trek's Memorial Flight has added 2 more names to its Enterprise mission. More of the Star Trek family will get the chance to boldly go where no one has gone before. This Texas-headquartered space burial company, Celestis, announced that their upcoming Enterprise flight would be adding more esteemed Star Trek franchise names to their Memorial Rocket mission. Representing a pair of respected behind-the-scenes luminaries, the flight now includes Greg Gine, the legendary veteran model maker and visual effects guru who created so many models seen in the Star Trek series, and Star Trek pioneer and associate producer and director Robert H. Justman, the person recognized as Gene Roddenberry's right-hand man who helped land Sir Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard for Star Trek The Next Generation. Enterprise flight will blast off in early 2023 using United Launch Alliance's Vulcan rocket carrying additional cremated remains and DNA samples of Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry and his wife Majel Barrett Roddenberry, Star Trek engineer James Scotty Doohan, and 2001 A Space Odyssey visual effects wizard Douglas Trumbull. However, this special memorial ship is not the primary objective of the Vulcan's voyage, as it seeks to deliver Pittsburgh-based Astrobotic Technologies Peregrine Lunar Lander to the moon's surface.
Yeah!
Yes, following that primary endeavor, Vulcan Centaur upper stage will continue into the inky void of outer space and into a solar orbit where it shall become the remote outpost Enterprise Station. Also on board the 2023 flight will be the initial... Sorry, that just cracked me up so much. Also on board the 2023 flight will be the initial two prototype satellites for Amazon's internet constellation named Project Kuiper, K-U-I-P-E-R. Good, Kuiper. Easy to remember Kuiper. Name, Jeff Bezos. Kuiper, is that it?
That's how you pronounce it. Yeah, I don't
All
know.
All right, fine. I'm a slave to phonetics. What do you want? I was just waiting for them to, like, define, are we talking cremated ashes here or actual corpse bodies? I was
find
that.
No, we're talking cremated ashes, and what's weird to me, well, I don't want to be disrespectful, but I will say that we have read many articles over the years that have carried many ashes of many of these people up into space before, and so you'll notice that this article says additional ashes, so I'm just kind of curious about what that's all about. I don't want
I
to
am
speculate.
Too, and what
yeah.
qualifies as, what is the other phrase they said here? What DNA samples, right? Okay, because
yeah.
that's a broad
yeah.
category, right?
Well,
it's like, you know, you got to wonder.
Yeah, you do. And what's interesting is I feel like there is a granted, I have not researched this at all, so I am totally shooting from the hip. I have not looked this up, but my guess would be that there's a there's a certain indelibility to having your DNA shot up in a shielded container into space, right? Because, like, billions of years from now when the Earth is dead and the sun is expanded and everybody's gone, maybe that DNA sample is still there and maybe you're resurrectable. I love the meaning that people put into things like this, and I feel like I want to learn more. This is one of those articles that that Paul just read that I kind of feel like I just want to know more about where the additional things coming from. Why are they doing this? What is the actual goal of this mission, so to speak?
Exactly.
Well,
right. What's the motivation behind Celestis?
Yeah,
dude. There is an alien base on the dark side of the moon. Everybody knows that.
We know that, Jim. It's okay. They're looking the other way. It's fine.
Yeah, and but their drive-through, have you been there? Their drive-through is terrible. I mean, the service is really bad. I've been backed up for like an hour and a half just to get a side of fries. It's terrible, man. I mean, it's just, it's called the dark side of the moon for a reason.
That's why things are
no good
there.
Hopefully they get this, maybe the Peregrine lander that they're sending down there is going to help bring some better tech or, maybe some batteries or something or a deep fryer that can help, get the thing going a little better, but something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But,
yeah, I mean, it's a cool little lander. It's not very big. It's only like as big as a human being. It's like a meter and a half or a meter and nine high and a couple of meters wide. So it's just it's like a little tiny thing, but it's got those kind of classic Apollo 11 feet to the lander,
oh, cool.
Which I think are kind of cool. It looks a little retro to me. It's got the gold foil going on, so I like that.
We're seeing a lot of crazy stuff like this. I saw some they're doing astronauts now testing doing moonwalk testing again recently.
Yeah.
And just to sort of prepare for something going on in the next couple of years, right? And the spacesuits they're designing for these cats are nuts. I mean, they're just crazy looking. They're really, it's like, do I really want to have, like, accordions where my armpits are? I'm not sure, right? It's just really wild looking. So it's pretty interesting to just, take a second to consider, our mortality and the mortality of the celebrities who are part of the Star Trek universe. And just, like, I'm assuming everyone asked in advance to be sent into space. It's no one's having their remains sent out without their,
I would assume so.
What
and
are you doing putting me in this thing?
Well, and I think
sure that Jimmy Doohan probably signed something, right? I mean, is that fair to say?
Yeah.
His estate, I would assume there's an estate involved and some other folks made because he couldn't possibly have known. Well, I mean, I guess he could have known. Yeah, I don't know. Just speculation. Who knows?
Yeah, it's wild, but it's an interesting thing, right? I mean, it's just you can't help but, you know, poke a little fun at it because it's like, you know, I mean, this stuff costs jillions of dollars, right? And there's just so much stuff going on. It just does seem like it's a curious thing, but, you know, you got to choose to look at it with a sense of timelessness, I think is the right way.
Right.
Because it's like if
right.
you're out there in space, you exist forever. And I love the idea of some alien species finding this stuff and saying, oh, Lone, what's this then?
Yeah.
You know,
well, and
DNA here. Somebody, you know, and doing something with it. And who knows? Maybe there's a chance this brings back Greg Gine and Robert H. Jessman and other, you know, celebrity luminaries to do more work in the future. So who knows? Anything's possible.
Well, speaking
but,
of work in the
thing.
Future, David, what do you got for us?
All right. Looks like I got a piece of Star Trek Picard news for the UK. So, Star Trek Picard Season 3 UK release date confirmed by Prime Video. Star Trek Picard Season 3 has announced its UK launch date on Prime Video, reuniting a number of legends from The Next Generation. These final 10 episodes of Jean-Luc Picard revival will begin streaming on a weekly basis from February 17th, 2023. Amanda Plummer has joined the assembled as the mysterious alien captain of warship Shrike, Vadic, who could well be the latest big bad. Micah Burton is also on board as ancient Alondra LaForge, the youngest daughter of LeVar Burton's Geordi LaForge, while cruel summer star Ashley Sharp Chestnut plays her older sister, and USS Titan helmsman ancient Sidney LaForge, alongside Patrick Stewart Picard and Burton LaForge. We have Michael Dorn, Jonathan Frakes, Gate McFadden, Marina Sirtis, Brent Spiner, reprising their respective Next Generation characters, and Jerry Ryan and Michelle Hurd, weighing in on why it's taken this long to get them all together for one last time. Picard showrunner Alex Kurtzman said, "When we first started, of course the first instinct is to bring back the entire crew of The Next Generation. And Patrick was amazing because he said to us, if we're going to do this, what I don't want to do is repeat old things. If we're going to get to the crew, then we have to earn it. I think we took two seasons to earn that return. What we didn't want to do was have the crew return and do sort of cameos. We actually wanted everybody to have really significant roles and whet appetites to see them together. At the beginning of the season, the crew is in a different place. The crew is in different places around the galaxy, and slowly we see them come together. These are such beloved characters, we wanted to take the time to see what they're up to now," he added. I'm really excited about this one. Can't wait for the season 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be good.
Jonathan and
Jerry Ryan appeal to Star Trek fans to help fight pancreatic cancer and ALS. November is pancreatic cancer awareness month. Oh my God, say that three times fast. And Star Trek The Next Generation legend Jonathan Frakes is lending his voice to support the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, PanCAN. This year's campaign titled Research for All of Us encourages the nation to get involved in the fight against pancreatic cancer by sharing inspiring stories, including Frakes, which highlights the urgent need for more research and donations to PanCAN to support pancreatic cancer patients and their families. Frakes, who lost his brother Daniel to pancreatic cancer, understands the pain and fear the disease brings patients and their loved ones. This has driven his partnership with PanCAN and commitment to the cause. 24 years ago, I lost my best friend, my brother Daniel, to pancreatic cancer. His doctor gave him 6 to 8 months to live, saying there was nothing that could be done for him. He died a week before my daughter was born, said Frakes. Frakes also serves as a team leader alongside his fellow actor Kitty Swink, who happens to be married to Armin Shimerman, 18-year-old pancreatic cancer survivor, and her husband, Armin Shimerman. They have raised thousands of dollars for the organization's largest annual fundraiser, PanCAN Purple Stride, the ultimate walk to end pancreatic cancer. People can support the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network by visiting pancan.org. They can also participate in a free virtual event on World Pancreatic Cancer Day, November 17th, when survivors, caregivers, and researchers bring to life some of the incredible stories about the impact pancreatic cancer research and PanCAN has had on their lives. You can register for free at pancan.org/WPCD2022. And Star Trek Voyager and Star Trek Picard star Jeri Ryan has launched an even more personal appeal on behalf of another member of the Star Trek family, Margaret Mrazauskas, who has served as Ryan's stand-in on Picard and recently diagnosed with bulbar onset ALS at 50 years old. Alongside TNG and Picard star LeVar Burton, Jonathan Frakes, Michelle Hurd, and Brent Spiner asks friends to visit TrekAgainstALS.com to support her, whose motor functions are rapidly declining and will soon require round-the-clock care. Just a few months ago, she was living a vital, active life, but after the rapid initial onset of symptoms, her prognosis is now 2 to 3 years. Margaret's joyous spirit and warm heart have also made her a dear friend over the years, stated Ryan. She is going through something that with most people, deepest fears, and she is facing it with grace and strength. In all of its honor for Margaret's friends in the Trek community and beyond to help her through this difficult time, and hate the LAS Association continue its work in finding a cure for this disease. I know two people, actually, someone who died of ALS and another person who has it. And it's a very scary disease to get, and it's very serious. So if you can, please go and help out in any way that you possibly can. And Charles, what do you got going on for us?
Well, Pluto TV is at it again, launching a second Star Trek channel, adding reruns of Star Trek DS9 and the original series. While Paramount Plus subscription streaming service gets most of the attention, Paramount's global Pluto TV has continued to grow to be the leading free streaming service in the USA with 70 million active users. The ad-supported streaming service streams live with dozens of themed and genre channels with content of over 400 different media companies. This includes dedicated Star Trek channel 270 that launched in 2021, which features reruns of Star Trek Next Generation along with selected Star Trek feature films, and Pluto TV has just announced they will be adding more CBS content to the service to the U.S. with over 63,000 new and classic episodes, tripling the amount of CBS content. Included in this expansion is the addition of Star Trek, the original series, which will be adding to the current Star Trek channel along with Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which will launch more Star Trek channels. The CBS content will be rolling into streaming services over November and December. It is not known if or when Hood TV will expand to offer Star Trek Voyager Enterprise currently. All of Star Trek content on Pluto is available live and is not part of their limited on-demand offering. In addition to the classic Star Trek shows, Pluto TV will continue to offer sample episodes, the new original Star Trek series Paramount Plus Picks, Channel 210, along with additional programming from Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus Global has cited Pluto TV as one of the drivers for the new subscriptions for Paramount Plus.
Yes, and that, my friends, wraps up our Star Trek news just in time to talk about Star Trek Prodigy, Let Sleeping Borg Lie, Season 1, Episode 12. When the crew encounters a dormant Borg cube, Zero risks everything to save the ship. And before we go too far, I've started to rip these off of Instagram. So this is Kate Mulgrew talking about self-sacrifice.
Hi, I'm Kate Mulgrew, and I voice Catherine Janeway in Star Trek Prodigy. Self-sacrifice is when we put our own interests aside in order to do good for others and is among the bravest acts in the universe.
Poggle go last. You know, to protect you all.
This week on Star Trek Prodigy, Zero puts their fear aside and takes on the very daunting task of joining the Borg Collective to gain valuable information.
This isn't a joke. Whoever goes in might not come back.
With no guarantees they'll be able to return to their friends, Zero sacrifices their own safety for the greater good.
Trying to protect me was an act of love, and you should never feel ashamed for that.
Without their self-sacrifice, the team might not have uncovered a way to disarm the Protostar weapon.
All right, guys, you ready to talk about some Prodigy? Every week on our Facebook page, I ask you guys, are fans, our followers, which, by the way, there's over 103,000 of you out there, which is incredibly awesome, to score this week's episode on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the best. And Eric, what did our Facebook fans have to say about Let Sleeping Borg Lie?
Oh, man, Jim, we have myriad different opinions, which is why I love our page. We're getting it from all over the place because Bill Horonic said a 3.5. I get that it's for kids, but they escaped way too easily. That bothered him. Dustin S. Wing said 6.5. Against the grand scale of Trek as a kid show, every episode has been 8 to 10, but only 6.5 for this one, Dustin. Maria Talara gave it a 9. Spencer Loom said awesome, double exclamation point, gave it a 10. Teresa Camuso Kennedy gave it a 7.5. And Michael Foote said pretty tired of Borg storylines, so 2. Sean Johnson gave us a little wave with a 9. And Chris Troney said 8. Happy to see them bounce back after last week with more story and character progression. For the first time, I see Dahl being the leader they need instead of Gwyn. Also, no life signs at the station? Where did the station crewmen go after selfishly abandoning our crew last episode? Good question, Chris. I hope he's not dead. That would be sad. Hamizan Hassan said an absolute 10, and Paul Godsill gave it an 8. And that, you guys, gives us a combined fan score this week of 7.4. Now, that's not terrible, but it's not great. You know, our inaugural episode after the reboot gave us a 7.6, so this is a little bit lower. But the hosts liked last week's episode quite a bit more than the fans did. Fans give it a 7.6, but the hosts give it an 8.9, so I will be very curious to hear what the hosts do with this 7.4 this week.
Well, guys, we always have a cadet training, which is when we talk to you guys about episodes you can go back and watch. It'll fill in some of the gaps from this week's episode. So let's give it a shot. right, Eric. Take it away, Charles.
Right. I kind of sat and thought about this, did a little research. It's like, you know what? There's actually quite a few episodes we can go back and talk about. Let's go back to Next Generation, Q Who, Season 2, Episode 16, where Q introduces us to the Borg. Voyager's Unity, Season 3, Episode 17, is the first full appearance of the Borg in Voyager. Yes, we do see a Borg skeleton in the previous episode, but this is the first time that they actually deal with the actual Borg. Star Trek First Contact, where we meet the First Queen. Enterprise, Regeneration, Season 2, Episode 23, is a sequel to First Contact. Picard, Remembrance, Season 1, Episode 1. We meet the ex-Borg. We get post-Voyager and post-Prodigy. Then I'm going to bring a discussion in later about that scene. TNG's Best of Both Worlds, Season 3, Episode 26. Our first assimilated Star Trek crew member, Locutus. Voice, Endgame, Season 7, Episode 25-26, The End of the Borg, maybe, which is another point I will be bringing in. And by the way, this episode in Prodigy occurs 6 years after Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You guys ready to dive right in and talk about this episode?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Well,
but first, go ahead, Charles.
Go ahead. Go ahead and do.
As I said, I kind of like this because this isn't in the episodes, and a lot of people might have not seen this or heard this. So I've been ripping the Vice Admiral's logs off of Instagram. I'm playing him on the podcast. So this is the Vice Admiral's log from Janeway in reference to this episode.
Vice Admiral's log, Stardate 61293.1. Despite his unknown species, Dr. Noam has stabilized our mysterious visitor by replicating a serum found nearby. From early tests, Noam believes his physiology may possess energy-based psychokinesis, not unlike some Zalconians. Unfortunately, our guest has suffered some kind of neurolytic shock and is barely conscious. Still, we've gleaned what we can, namely that dangerous criminals have kidnapped his daughter and stolen the protostar. Chakotay's role in all this is yet to be seen. He is a survivor, if nothing else. But Chakotay would have never allowed what happened to Relay Station CR-721. Such wanton devastation. Nothing left but dust and debris. No Starfleet ship should be used as a weapon of conquest. I will find them and bring them to justice.
Dun, 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 dun. Okay. Who wants to dive in and get the conversation started?
I do. I want to jump in on one because I heard an interesting discussion about this episode, and it got me thinking and tying episodes together. At Endgame, Admiral helps shut down the Borg. In this episode, we get to meet a Borg cube that is asleep, but this crew does revive it. What if this one, which may be the only one still active, eventually moves on to assimilate a group of Romulans and eventually appears in Star Trek Picard?
As the artifact.
As the artifact. This may be the artifact. What do people think of that one?
It's very possible, actually, because it's the only Borg cube that we're aware of that's in this part of the galaxy right now.
Okay. So I would not completely disagree with you guys, but I'm just going to take this to a purely technical level, okay? Because I am an architect. I'm a spatial guy. I understand what happens here and there. So first of all, remember that this show is set in 2383 and that Picard, when we see the artifact, is set in 2399. So we're looking at a 16-year gap, no big deal, right? Something could have happened during that 16 years. We could have blown it up with super emotions. But if you look at the cube that comes out in Prodigy, it has a sphere port, which is a little bit different from most of your standard cubes. Most of your standard cubes just are cubes. And the sphere port, the only time that we've ever seen a sphere port in a Borg cube was during what? First contact, of course, right? Where they launched the cube after they launched the sphere after they destroyed the cube. So if you look at this particular cube and you look at where the sphere port is located, because they show it very clearly in this episode that this one is not just a cube, it has that extra sphere component. It's outside the range, dimension of where it should be located relative to Picard's artifact, because you'll remember that the corner of Picard's artifact is completely destroyed and it's actually filled in by shields in Picard, and the sphere port doesn't geometrically work out to be in the same place that it should be. So I love the fact that there might be a connection between Prodigy and Picard, but I'm telling you right now, I don't think there is. I really don't. It's a different cube.
Well, to take that in another direction, how do we know that the Borg sphere isn't on the other side of the ship?
Yeah, no, that's fair, but I guess you would have to say, okay, in Star Trek Picard, when they showed the artifact, why didn't they show the side that had the sphere port? Why didn't they acknowledge that at all? So you could be looking at the opposite side there, but Prodigy is the one that clearly shows that it is, to me, a different cube just because it has a slightly different look to it. And, 16-year difference. This one could move on to try and assimilate some Romulans and then get destroyed by extreme emotions, because I do like some of the theories around parallels between Picard and how that cube got destroyed and how this cube kind of got mitigated by Zero, let's say.
Yeah, well, you know, I totally hear you, but, you know, there's that one article that was on Trek Movie, right, that got shared around. I think Charles put it up, right? I mean, if you read through the thing, right, who was it? He's like the Prodigy head writer, basically, right, Aaron Watke, and he weighed in on this, and he didn't exactly come out and confirm it, right, when, you know, sort of calling out the design aspects, but he pretty much gave it a strong maybe, and, you know, tying into a string of events, right? And it sure seemed like he was endorsing the theory pretty heavily. So and it could be one of those things that like, you know, wasn't like by design or intent, you know, not that they have the most, you know, thorough pre-planned mesh ever for every piece of storytelling going on over there. I mean, who knows? But when somebody raises the idea, they're like, well, maybe it is. They're willing to play along. But he seemed like he was definitely willing to, you know, lend more credence than not to the idea.
Well, Paul,
he's like the head Prodigy writer, right?
It's true, but it was the innuendo. And what I would seem, or what I would think, is a little bit more clear, at least from the evidence that we've been presented so far, is that this is the same cube that we saw in Endgame. I think it is. I think these Borg that we see asleep on this are the same Borg that get put to sleep by her virus at the
could
at
be
the
both of, though, right? I mean, is there a chance it could be both? That is the end of the one from Endgame is still the one from the artifact is still the one here.
But
it's just one single sleeping cube.
I know. Why did they so prominently show that sphere port in Prodigy? I don't know. It could be. I'm not saying
well,
it's not,
I,
but
I think the fact is that maybe they just, that's how Prodigy decided to create their cube. But the fans are looking at it, but can we tie this cube into Picard? And I don't think it might be Prodigy purposely did it, but Prodigy may turn around and say, well, we didn't mean to do that. But
yeah, they're going to retcon it.
The fans got the great
maybe.
Idea. Why don't we go ahead and let the fans go with it and say it is fact.
Why not?
Yeah, that seems seems legit, Charles.
Yeah.
Why not sit there and why not just sit there and maybe have a little Easter egg that might sit there and say, hey, fans, there's a tie-in that you might want to go see Picard and what happens in the future.
But then again, we only saw the Borg sphere in First Contact. We never saw the Borg sphere on any other Borg cube that we've ever seen. So obviously when they made it, they didn't know about the Borg sphere because they couldn't put something there that hadn't been created yet, right?
Right, and in Prodigy, they clearly show it. So I guess that's my argument.
But then again, we could be looking at the southwest
the
corner of the
sphere. Right.
You know.
Totally.
I think this is the new Tribble Borg. They're starting their own empire.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
here he goes. He's bringing the Tribbles into it.
let's talk about my favorite character on Prodigy, Zero. Let's talk about Zero.
Mm-hmm.
I love Zero.
Yeah.
Zero is the ultimate. And Zero gets assimilated. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because he's essentially a non-corporeal entity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
yeah.
He's not tangibly physical.
They
yet
are.
Somehow he was still able to be, I mean, the way they portrayed it, especially when he breaks loose in his, you know, moment of gestalt at the end there, he kind of breaks loose like a physical entity, like
they.
He is tangible, right? Pushing away from the
right.
crazy tentacles, the Doc Ock tentacles, right? But but it was just, you know, I don't know how literal some of this stuff is meant to be, right? Because it's really just meant to be like his will. And his,
there.
You know, his
there.
Strength of character and his ability to, like, connect with the others that he's bonded with is what gives him the strength, right? I mean, think that feels like the message for a young viewer show that they're trying to, convey, right? And I agree. I thought it was really, really interesting. Of all the characters they could have chosen to be the one who are to make the selfless act, right, and to be willing to say, I'll risk being assimilated. I thought that was the best choice because it's like he is probably the one who has the best chance of escaping it because of the nature of his entity, right? And who knows, he could just freak them out if they get a good look at him and they're all toast forever, right? I mean, so who knows? But I thought that was really interesting, and it felt more science fiction to me, more like, you know, classic science fiction, having him be the one who does that, and it's altruistic and it's brave. So a really cool choice for that character. But I agree, Zero is fascinating.
And I really like Gwyn in this episode because she saves them all by resisting her instinct to fight. And Janeway says to her, well, not Admiral Janeway, but Hologram Janeway, tells her to put away her weapon and do not fight and they'll ignore you. And at first she's kind of like, well, that's a load of crap. I'm going to fight them anyways. And then she retracts her blade and walks right through the Borg. Well, there was the one Borg at the end that kind of turns and gives her the stink eye a little bit, but she gets by him. And Janeway is proven right that, you know, the urge to fight isn't always the best one. I thought that was a really awesome character moment for Gwyn right there. Would you guys agree?
Yes, I agree.
Yep. And then,
yeah, it was interesting
course,
that they, you know, from what we were used to seeing, they couldn't really assimilate people by, injecting them with the little nanites like we're used to seeing. And they sort of suspended that ability, right? So it's like when you see them all in jeopardy, you know, in the last act, right? They're all sort of strapped down to some, you know, like being tied to the train tracks device, right? And, you know, more of an old school Jeopardy thing. They have to be sawed loose from. But Do we know why they didn't have the ability to use their conventional nanites? Is that from, you know, disabled in the same way that we know from Voyager? Or
well,
do we know what that's about?
No. Well, the nanites attack organic matter. And the thing with Zero is that it's an interface between a non-corporeal being and technology. So we don't really have an actual precedent for that.
I know that, but I mean when they caught everyone else, right? Everyone else is tied up to some big hub thing.
Well, the
but
article...
they never were injected with nanites, which usually the Borg do the second they get a hold of you, where then Reach, right? Like the big rhinoceros-looking Borg, right? He's got a hold of everybody. I was expecting somebody to get popped with the nanites, but it didn't.
Well,
right?
the article that was on the Facebook page said that when Janeway disabled them with her nanolytic virus, that essentially what she did was she killed all the nanites. She wiped them all out, so they no longer had that ability. So they had
so
to go
they
back
had to figure out an alternate method to assimilate that was more like surgical. Then okay,
right. Hmm. So the kind of like what they did to Locutus in The Best of Both Worlds, and that's the way they. Hmm. And that's why people assumed that this cube is the one that we see in Picard, because it didn't have the nanotechnology anymore, you know.
So that disablement is a result of what Admiral Janeway did in the finale then of Voyager. Okay, I got to go back and watch that again, because it seems like I'm not remembering all those details, which is cool. It'd be fun to look at that again. So very interesting.
How awesome would it be if Vice Admiral Janeway comes face to face with the Borg that she annihilated at the end of Endgame, you know, because she's there, the Borg are there, so she could meet up with the Borg again. It's possible. It's very possible. But anyways, so let's talk about the weapon that the Diviner put in the Protostar. And the whole reason why they go to the Borg cube in the first place is to get the technology to disarm the weapon so that they can go to the Federation, because we saw what happens when the Protostar interacts with Federation technology. It causes it to go haywire and self-destruct. So therefore, the Protostar cannot come in contact with any other Federation technology. It would be disastrous. So they go aboard the cube to get information to disarm it, only to find out it's not possible. They can't do it because I forgot the exact reason. It's built into it's a self-replicating intelligent virus or something like that that's part of the ship. I don't remember the exact reason.
Yeah, I don't really get the reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just called it like the living construct, right? That was the name for it, right? He referred to the weapon as a living construct, and Jankum Pog tries to shoot his phaser at it, but it basically they kind of say, oh, it can protect itself. But then we didn't really get a lot of other detailed information about what that was or how it did it. But, you know, the good news is it didn't just, you know, reflect his, you know, phaser fire right back at him and kill him. So that was good. It's just more defensive, I guess. It just defends itself.
Right.
Was that your take on it?
Yeah, I was thinking to myself, why don't they just beam it out into space? You know? But then
it's
I'm thinking,
part
well,
they talk, get a lock on it.
They talk about how it's in a... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say maybe they couldn't get a lock on it because they did mention that it was from the future. So maybe there's something blocking transporters or could be something from, like, maybe it's control. I don't know.
I thought somebody said some comment about that the reason they didn't beam it into space because it would be, like, irresponsible. That it would basically, it would be like, I can't remember, was it Hologram Janeway or somebody said, like, basically
said.
If they did that, it would be like throwing your trash out the window, that it would just be leaving it. It would still be active, and someone else would just end up running into it, and they didn't want to toss their problems out on someone else. So it was kind of this ethical choice was what I got.
I'll have to go back and watch it.
Well,
does anyone else remember that?
Yeah, no. Paul's 100%.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think that's right.
I'm 100% right. That never happens. Come on.
Don't tell your wife that, for
Jesus.
God's sake.
Go buy a lotto ticket.
Well, guys, we have our buddy Ray back with us. Hey, Ray, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Ray.
Hey, what's up, man? Yeah, but
how you doing, Ray?
But why don't you? I heard everything, and you know, even though I'm off tomorrow, I heard everything for a past hour and a half. What about the boy and else? But here goes. Okay, right now. Okay, I just been watching. Okay, I did my homework. So I watched the Q who we were true, because Q was heated. Not, you know what I'm saying? Not let Ricard join crew. And Rancho, he's joined to the Wolves, but something is not supposed to be met yet until they reach their universe. So, promise you, this kind of like American history, if you really think about it, it's kind of like how, you know, how World War One or World War Two began. Let's say World War One probably end all wars, right? Okay, well, I'm saying that. But World War Two, when Germany, when Hitler came in power, what happened? We got involved. The same thing in Vietnam War, the Korean War. Everything about this is like the same thing. We got involved, which we should not be involved. Everything. So, going to the end of the day, why are we because of him? All of this should not be happening until they reach that point and they say, okay, we are ready to do this. No, they drove them on for something that they didn't even know what's going on. It's kind of like me going on a blind date. Like, I don't know what this girl want to do. I don't know this girl like chicken or a tire. I don't know if this girl want to be, you know what I'm saying, Star Wars or freaking a Braveheart. This, for my opinion, this how I look at it in a way. So the project with Jimmy was a stupid act in a way. And I said, I love Jimmy there. Let's say, and so like Voyager, they was going, what, missing in space, what, 5 years? And you pick up a Borg, right, and you try to get home, in a way. Now, it's kind of like one like Lost in Space, where Dallas Smith trying to do so much more damaging. But at the end of the day, it's the outcome. So I turn from my theory, I agree with everybody. For a past hour and a half, I've been listening to. But you know what, at the end of the day, it's like, why? Why is she going to sacrifice her life for something like, you know, like, it's no purpose? When McCall was became accused, right, it took Data bring him back. And what happened? After that, Data was dead, and it was Sergeant Nemesis, right? He's dead, right? Because for Android, he's not even human. No heart, no nothing. You know what, though? That's a friend that, you know what, I'm going to look out for him. I got no heart, no nothing like this. I agree with that. So, there is so around you, with the boy situation, they are cold, hearts, everything else, and even though there is a TV show, but even though it is reality, it's the same thing like this. I'm a black man. And I'm a black man. Now, if a white man asks me, you need anything, I will say yes. You know why? Because we are human beings. We need to help out each other. That was about. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
From that point. Which, like I said, I talk to you guys every week. You know what I'm saying? I'm a good with my buddies, right? But you know what I'm saying? But in the day, this is why this whole world is like eternal. It's like, you know what? Let's say, I'm not. Listen, you don't know me. I don't know you. We talk on podcasts, and like, you don't know what I look at. I don't know how you look at it. But you know what I'm saying? In the day, yo, we talk in peaceful terms, nothing. Daz is about. And his, like I said, this is going to be 2023, right, and we still doing this. This is ridiculous. So for my final note, before I go outside and do what I want to do, I love you guys. I still support y'all. I will still call y'all every Thursday. Sometimes, you know what I'm saying? Because you know what? Because you guys right here are an inspiration to everybody on podcast. Because even though I'm a Trekkie, but sometimes at the end of the day, it's a lot of truth. Watching a TV show, it's a lot of truth.
Absolutely. And we appreciate you. We appreciate you calling, Ray. We really appreciate it.
Anytime, my brother. Anytime.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Ray.
Anytime.
You have a good night, buddy.
You too, brothers. Enjoy your night.
All right, guys. So, Star Trek Prodigy, Let Sleeping Borg Lie. Overall, Charles, what would you give it in reference to what our fans, what did our fans give it? 7 point, what were the fans
four.
Score?
7.4.
Where would you put it, Charles?
Their escape kind of puts it a little too easy, a little bit predictable on the end. But overall, with stuff they did with it, I really enjoyed this episode. I'll go with an 8.5.
8.5 from Charles. How about you, Eric?
Yeah, I'll give it an 8. Good story, possible tie-ins. It, to me, embodied a lot of good Star Trek ideals in the teamwork that they put together. So, yeah, it's a solid 8.
8. David, what about you?
I'm going to go up there a little higher than last week. I actually enjoyed this one much, much more. It was a little predictable, as Charles said, but overall, I enjoyed it. I liked the sequence from beginning to end. It was actually keeping me on my seat quite a bit. So I'm actually going to give this one a 8.9.
8.9. Paul, how about you?
I think, yeah, I'm landing on an 8. I think a solid 8. There's some stuff about it that seemed a little, you know, familiar. It's like if I never had seen a Borg episode before, I'd be like, holy Mary, this is amazing. But, you know, we've seen a lot, and I don't know that it brought a huge chunk of newness to Borg development. It was sort of a way of, I think, introducing them to the viewers on this show who maybe don't know as much about Star Trek and the whole overarching Borg mythology. So I think it probably was existing as an episode to serve that, to introduce them to that larger universe, which presumably, if you're having an episode like this, we're thinking that we're going to see more of the Borg again, kind of like what's going on with the Gorn on Strange New Worlds. So, but I think they did a pretty good job with it for the most part. Again, likability of the characters is what keeps me coming back. So I think an 8 for me.
Yeah, I'm right around Charles. I'm going to go with an 8.6 for an introductory episode meant for kids that don't know much about Star Trek. And like Paul said, if you've never seen the Borg, this would have opened your eyes. I thought the mood was great. It really scared me in a couple of points. I was like, wow, this is pretty intense for a kid. And I enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it. So I'm going to go with an 8.6, which is very, very respectable. So I just want to let you guys know that rounds up to a fan score of 8.4. So once a week, once again, we're higher than the fans. So there you have it. And I'm really excited. I got to let you guys know, go to trektalking.com. Because on Monday, we're going to be talking to the one, the only, Spice Williams Crosby. Right here, same bat time, same bat channel, 7:30, Vixis from Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, the best ever Star Trek movie. And she's going to be here to talk with us. So have your Klingon ready. Have it in speed dial. Give us a call. Talk to Spice. She doesn't bite unless you want her to. She's really delightful. She's really funny. She's great to talk to. And for our 500th episode, I thought, who else to have on? So she'll be with us on Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So you definitely want to be around.
Hey, Jim, real quick. Quick question, man. Isn't today 498?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So how is Monday 500?
Because Thursday would be 500. We couldn't get Spice for Thursday. We could only get her for Monday.
So it's 499 on Monday, though, because, right?
We're celebrating 500 on 499, and we'll do the rest of the party on the 500.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
So we're just going in chronological order because of the specialness of Spice.
No biggie.
Or Jim can host a special show, special little mini trek of his own on Saturday and make it 500.
I'm just trying to understand.
I'm in charge of the episode numbers, so that will be episode 500. Thursday's show will be episode 499. So when they
you
line
are
up,
folding time and space, sir. I love it. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
It'll come out as episode.
I know our audience is asking these questions, so I feel I must as well.
It's the temporal effect of the Cold War.
Yeah, it's an anomaly. I'm with you. You've gone through the Atavacron, Jim. Okay.
So anyways, I want to say thank you to Ray for giving us a call tonight and chatting with us. Thank you so much, Ray. And I want to say thank you to Paul for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight. Thank you, Paul.
My pleasure. A delight.
And I haven't watched Prodigy yet, but I'm going to watch it as soon as we finish up here. And thank you to David, the donut guy, for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you so much, David.
Yeah, this has been really fun. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
And thank you to Eric for hanging out with us as well. Thank you, Eric.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
And thank you so much to our very own Charles, who's hanging out in Las Vegas. Thanks for Trek talking with us, Charles.
Oh, thank you very much. Always fun.
And I want to send a special fan shout out to our very own Shannon, who's been very, very busy as of late and hasn't been able to join us. But there's always, always a table at the captain's chair for you, Shannon. So thank you for listening to Shannon. And I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. Just saying, everybody, please go to TrekTalkin.com. Very easy to remember, TrekTalkin.com. And please stay safe and be good to each other. Star Trek fans are the best fans. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Good night, all.
Prosper.
Good night.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.